is time now for History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history with the one and only Scott Washington, who joins us here now in the studio to help us out. How are you?
Well, doing just great. And, you know, I appreciated that English theme there of Masterpiece Theater that starts off this program because something important happens in this country. Well, it affects this country. 1763, February 10th, the French and Indian War. The Treaty of Paris is signed between England, France, and Spain. This is one of the first world wars, and it plays out here in America. But because of one of the implications here in the Americas is there's 10,000 troops. The British don't want them back home, nor their officers. And so Britain thinks, you know what, the colonies really need to pay for this security. And that begins this policy of taxation. And the British colonists begin to rebel, saying, wait a minute, we haven't had any say-so in this. And, of course, they start identifying not as British colonists, but as Americans. And that's, you know, significant. That happens this week.
That's really significant just in the history of wars in the world. How many wars are started because people were upset with the way the last war wrapped up, right?
That's right. Yes. Well, in this one, it starts in Europe and the Americas, which looked like Europe because you have the English colonies on the right side of the map,
yes,
on the East Coast, and then you have French possession in the middle and Spain in there too. That, as I say, this wasn't exactly a British colony, a British Commonwealth, but after that long war, Britain can claim most of Canada and most of what we now call the United States.
Yeah. And that apparently wasn't the only peace treaty signed in Paris on that same day in history that ended a major war, because World War II, the Paris Peace Treaty, was signed on that exact same day in that same city. Yeah.
And those were the
different year.
Well,
but,
that's right. Yeah. And it's we think, well, in 45, but this is actually 1947, when the Allied powers, United States, Soviet Union, United Kingdom, and France, and Germany's allies, Italy, Romania, Hungary, Bulgaria, and Finland, they all come together and sign these peace accords, which is pretty significant. You're right. So isn't that interesting that those, we love these kind of coincidences.
Exactly. But that's also a really interesting point, too, that the treaty is signed in 1947. The war had been over for close to 2 years at that point, but it takes that long to negotiate, to get everyone around the table. A lot happens in 46,
Well,
too.
Of course, the Allies are occupying Europe. It's in ruins, and so they're bringing people together and working out what would be the final kind of elements of that peace treaty. So pretty important. You're right. And the peace things. Well, but this week also has some really interesting elements, too, that I think are significant. And these are the kind of the oddball things of history. And I'm going to touch on those and then come back to the amendments, because I think these are important. 1864, Abraham Lincoln poses for a photograph. That photograph becomes the basis of what the image we see on the $5 bill.
Awesome.
Which is just amazing to think. You're looking at an image of what the president looked like in 1864.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, yeah. And those pictures that you see on the dollar bills and the coins, we don't think of them as being works of art, but they come from somewhere. They
That's
were photographed, they were sculpted if they're on the coin.
And we talked about at one point how it was a young girl, apparently this is true, who suggested the president grow a beard.
Right, right.
And he did. But that was February 9th, 1864, is when that picture was taken that now appears. So when you pull out your $5 bill and you look at it and you go, I am looking at a picture of the president in 1864. I think that's kind of cool.
And then all the people behind you are honking their horns because the light's green and you haven't gone.
That's right.
Just looking at your $5 bill.
Well, maybe don't look at it right now if you're driving. I think you're absolutely right. There's another one that's kind of fun, which is that one of the Apollo missions there was actually one of the Apollo astronauts played golf on the moon.
Yes.
He smuggled a golf club aboard.
Just really hard to do, by the way.
Yes, exactly. Well, he used it with some of the other equipment and kind of camouflaged it, but was able to play golf on the moon.
That's
to the great delight of golfers, you know, the longest hole. And here's one that's really an interesting kind of whodunit or where is it. And it's and it happens in 1958.
Mm-hmm.
An H-bomb falls. The plane runs into trouble over Savannah, Georgia, and an H-bomb is...
As they are wont to do.
That's right. And so they decide, well, let's get rid of the bomb. So they let it go, and they haven't been able to find it ever since.
All right.
Now, that's right. This was February 5th, 1958, in this jettison near the coast of Savannah, Georgia. And they think it's still there, but they've been trying to locate it and have never been able to locate this.
Oh, good.
Isn't that interesting?
That's real good. Every so often you hear these stories that really give you hope that that leadership knows what they're doing and they're taking care of us all.
I know. That's one of those things like, what? How could that be possible? So I
guess if it lands in the Atlantic, it's going to be hard to spot,
well,
but still.
Maybe there have been successive campaigns to find it and quietly retrieve it. We don't know about it, but
right.
At least publicly, it has not been found.
I feel like if they had found it, that's the sort of thing that they would tell people, because it's not a good look if you lose a nuclear bomb.
That's
it's a much
right.
better look if you find a nuclear
Come
bomb.
Come to Savannah,
so.
The waters are warm.
Yes, right.
Exactly. Also, this is a great week for really significant people in history who were born this week. Rosa Parks, born February 4th. Of course, she's the woman who sits down by standing up for civil rights in 1954 Montgomery, and starts a long-standing protest movement that leads to desegregation and so many things. Also, Frank Wills. Now, he's not a person that we probably know as much of his name, but he is a security guard at the Watergate Hotel.
Oh, the Watergate guy,
yes. Who reports the break-in, and that begins to unravel this whole thing with the Nixon administration and the dirty tricks and so much more. But he actually portrayed himself in the film.
All the president's men.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Isn't that a what? You know, to think of, here's a person who you think, oh well, all these great events of history, and it comes down to somebody doing their job and going, huh, well, this shouldn't be like this.
This door shouldn't be propped open like this. I'm going
to
walk through this door and see. Yeah.
Isn't that a good one? So and another one is February 7th, Frederick Douglass is born. And Frederick Douglass, who becomes this really significant, articulate African-American, born into slavery, escapes from slavery, then he escapes actually to Great Britain, and then he raises enough money to, quote-unquote, buy his freedom. But he comes back to the United States, a strong voice. He speaks all over the place. In fact, when I was up in Nantucket, there was evidence he had talked up there as well, which is wonderful. He was in the White House too, so he's a significant voice and a compelling argument about what was going on here was wrong.
And you think about the history, the life of Frederick Douglass. He was a major abolitionist in the 1840s, 1850s,
yes.
1860s. He continues to be a leading voice for civil rights and racial progress in the 1870s. And like 50 years of American history, he's one of the most significant figures there. You
articulate,
think of how few people had that long of a run as being such a pivotal figure in history.
That's right. And there's where he could have simply, once he escaped, said, that's it, I'm done. But instead, and he's in a whole other country where he's recognized, and he decides, I'm going back because what's going on there is wrong. And it becomes this exactly articulate voice, not only during but afterwards. And I think that's just a testimony of how history is made, is sometimes the biography of people coming together at certain times in history, I'm not telling you or any of our listeners anything new that we don't know. Like the people here at WCHL, you know, these are the significant people that make this a great station. And
this is a bit of a step down from Frederick Douglass,
okay,
but thank you. That was...
Well, I was just trying to say that there are significant people... You're right, but I
am more than happy to be included in the same sentence with Frederick Douglass. Not sure it's earned, but I will take it 100%.
All right, well, there's great stories. I see, and I'm thinking because another person born February 7th is Charles Dickens, this great storyteller. So I'm thinking about great stories, and WCHL has certainly some reason to be a part of the great story of broadcasting.
A lot of great writers that were born on this day in history. Yes. Douglas, of course, was a great writer. Charles Dickens, Sinclair Lewis, Laura Ingalls Wilder, they're all born on
all
the same day.
That's right. So if you are born on February 7th, congratulations. Yes. You are in good company.
You are destined today to be a great writer, and if you don't become one, that's on you, Bub.
you can put that on a bumper sticker. It's on you, Bub. Also, John Lafitte is born this week. He is this pirate person of some kind of swashbuckling stories and films that actually works with Andrew Jackson, and they defeat the British at this Battle of New Orleans after the peace treaty had been signed, but they didn't know it. And it's
upset with the peace treaty. I mean, every single war
starts
with that.
Well, there's another peace treaty one, but this is one they didn't know about.
They didn't even know about it.
Had been signed yet, and they significantly defeat the British in a battle there.
You can still go to Jean Lafitte's bar in downtown New Orleans,
yes,
French Quarter.
Yes, and you go to the battlefield, actually.
Yeah.
It was the Americans lost maybe 15, and the British lost several hundred. I mean, it was significantly different. And a lot of the credit is given to Lafitte and his enterprising bunch. It was interesting talking to some of the people in New Orleans who, when I said pirate, they said, well, he was just an entrepreneur. I said,
a subset of the other,
yeah,
I think. I do appreciate our respective priorities for visiting New Orleans. I'm like, you can go to Jean Lafitte's bar. You're like, you can go to Jean Lafitte's battlefield. I'm like, yep, that sums up our respective weekends.
WCHL
right
has been there many times.
Pretty
so,
much,
you know,
yeah.
This is another reason to support this station and listen closely.
How do you buckle a swash?
I think, you know.
So many people are described as swashbuckling. I don't.
That's right. You know, I never thought about that. It's a really good idea. Well, I hope that this will provoke people to say, yeah, how do you buckle swashbuckling?
I'm looking this up.
Good. I hope so.
Wikipedia has got to have the origin.
Term,
either that or the OED does.
You know, we try to cover all the bases here, and sometimes we just don't quite get it exactly right.
Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters. Swashbuckling is looking up. Oh, okay, got it.
Okay, good.
Swashbuckler is a compound of the word swash, which is to swagger with a drawn sword, and buckler, which is a small shield gripped in the fist. So you've got a shield in one hand, a sword in the other, and you're just strutting down the street like that. That's swashbuckling.
You know, I learned so much. I'm so glad that I'm here on Thursday just because of this. Learning about swashbuckling.
Hey, I didn't know that. I dare say very few of our listeners knew that.
You know, this is what makes history so interesting, because we don't let it just sit a dusty. We ask these questions and say, where did that term? Yeah, now we know, and now you'll be able to ask that question of any of your loved ones.
There you go. That was a joke question when I asked that, but now I'm glad I did, because
I
know
too.
That now. I
did not know. This is really
did
exciting.
Did not realize that.
Stuff. Well, here is something, an innovation. We had a couple of innovations this week. Facebook was founded in 2004. On February 4th. But of course, it was at Harvard then. It doesn't really spring into the mainstream until around 2007. But still, that's a pretty significant and major innovation that we think, oh, well, that's always been around. No, it hasn't. But it certainly has been a huge factor. Another one is something that started with pizza. It was a restaurant chain called Pizzaville. And then they decided, you know, somebody said, well, what are you doing in the mornings? And, you know, pizzas are maybe afternoon or evening. And so they decided, well, we've got the dough. Why don't we do something? And somebody suggested, well, they have biscuits, just so they could expand.
Oh.
And the first of these, a new kind of experiment, opened in Danville, Virginia, I believe it was in 1967, and we know it now as Biscuitville. Pizzaville? Well,
go.
No,
Pizzaville's gone, yeah.
But Biscuitville survived, which is kind of interesting. Also this week, the metric system got introduced February 10th, 1964. Now, this is not something that we're going to jump up and say, oh, yes, we use the metric. No, but it is used in Europe. Mm. There is one And of course, the royal foot, I'm thinking of Charlemagne,
right,
and being introduced many, many hundreds of years ago. We use slightly different, but there was one kind of quirk in all this when the Hubble telescope went up. And they turned it on,
and
it was slightly
yeah.
blurry. And they had to go back through all of the things and realize the American team, because it was cooperative, used a measurement at one small, tiny moment that was in...
Not metric, right?
That's right. Yeah. And that created the problem. They had to send up a repair team.
Yep.
Tech support.
With a calculator,
right,
like times 1.8, okay, equals turn
that's
it to
right.
the left. Yeah.
Hey, try it now. Yeah, yeah, that looks a lot better.
We've got Scott Washington here in the studio. History Matters. We've got time for one more. What do you got?
Okay, well, let's talk about, real quick, the amendments. There are three that are get ratified this week.
Mm-hmm.
The 11th Amendment, which limits the power of people to sue other states, the 25th Amendment,
mm-hmm.
And the 20th Amendment. Now, there was one thing that came up this week that I thought maybe you could help out with, which was the Jackson election, that where he gets elected.
Oh,
and
he wins
he has the popular vote and the electoral votes, but not enough, and so it becomes Adams
yeah,
becomes the president.
I think
tell
it's the one year when this happened,
yeah.
when Andrew Jackson wins the electoral, wins the popular vote, he gets the most electoral votes, but this is before the party system formed, so there's four major candidates
yeah.
all running, and they all get some of the popular vote and some of the electoral vote. No one gets a majority, and you need a majority, so it goes
well,
to the House of Representatives.
Now,
and they
is,
end up
1825,
electing John Quincy Adams.
February 9th, 1825. Explain why this is. Is this as a result of the electoral votes were 99 to 84, but that wasn't enough?
Because other candidates got electoral votes, too. You need a majority.
Okay.
So, like, even now, you don't need to get the most electoral votes. You need to get to 270.
Right.
And if no one gets to 270, then it gets kicked to the House of Representatives, and they ended up voting for John Quincy Adams.
Wow.
That's the third-party strategy. If I can win these six states,
right.
then I can prevent anyone from getting a majority. And if it gets kicked to the House of Representatives, then they might vote for
and
me.
And so that's the concern about third-party candidates running then as a result.
That's a concern.
A concern.
That's one of a few concerns.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, we wouldn't do our fair thing if we didn't say the Beatles make their appearance uh-huh. on the Ed Sullivan Show this week, watched by 73 million people, 1964.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And that is History Matters for this week. Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.